is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, I can't ever do it by myself. There's no way that's possible. So sitting beside me is the man with the massive disc off arm drive. Like, I've seen him throw 500, folks. It's Kyle McBeth.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio. I am your wood elf druid.
That's right.
Back from a recent campaign. No, man, I'm doing good. It's nice out. The weather's great. I can't complain. The allergies got me messed up, but I'm doing good.
And you're right. We have been playing Dungeons & Dragons. We finally did it. We've started a couple of campaigns now.
After like a
maybe 20, another one.
25-year hiatus.
Yeah, yeah.
It was interesting to get back on the horse and just like, I don't know, exercise those muscles that I haven't done in forever.
It's so much fun. That's what we got done playing that first campaign. Kyle and I called each other and was back on the phone again for like 3 hours talking about it.
Yeah, because I think that we made a lot of mistakes. Our characters did. Yes. Like, man, we should have done that differently.
We should have done it differently.
For those people that aren't into playing, they have no idea what we're talking about. But it was neat. It was cool to do something that I haven't done since I was a teenager.
I'll just put it to you this way, folks. We were both trying to be good guys, and the campaign started off with we were in jail over a misunderstanding. And from that moment on, it just turned into murder, and it just went real bad. We were trying not to go that way.
You know what I enjoyed about it? And not just that, but so many times when I revisit something from my youth, it's a big disappointment now. You know what I mean? Like, that movie wasn't near as good as I remember. That food wasn't near as good as I remember. This was one of those happy times where it was just as much fun as I remembered it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Of all those days when we were losers and had nothing to do but sit around in a basement. It's one of those things that held up.
That's usually not a thing that happens as we get older, but
right?
It's one of those fun things that held up.
My parents are back from New Jersey after being up there for a month.
The return of Pop-Pop.
He's fine. He's at a rehabilitation center. He is got to go through some rehab for his leg.
Yeah.
Because he broke his ankle. But he's fine. I mean, I've been up there a couple times to see him, and he's good, and I think he'll be home soon.
Cool, cool, cool.
So
yeah.
Thanks for all the kind words, people out there that were.
You can't stop the human cockroach.
I don't know how many lives he's got, but he's already burned through about 14. But that's
he's like a cat. He's unstoppable.
Outside of that, I am heading to the coast in 2 weeks, a week or so. I don't know the exact date. We're going to hang out on the beach for a couple days.
Right on.
And then we don't have very long till school starts.
Nope. Yeah, it'll be here before we know it now.
You know, time just flies.
Yeah, but it is. Yeah, tell me about it. It's crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Man, we've been doing this for a while. All of y'all been hanging on for a while. And speaking of hanging on, so I did the show about the not deer, right?
That's right.
And we got a lot of good feedback, and some people had no idea. So we started getting stories, and you just so happened to have one.
Yeah, check this out. It says, "Hey, guys, I just recently found your show. The first episode I listened to was the not deer one. And I didn't know that's what other people called them. My stepbrothers and their dad had an experience while hunting. And when they told me the story, to me, they called it the not deer, or the backward deer. And that was the first and only story I've ever heard of one. It was the name they had given to it themselves, and I'm pretty sure they had never heard of it before either. I really thought the mere experience was a one-off thing, all the way up until I heard your show a few months ago, and that just blew my mind. So the story is fairly short, and it was long ago before my time, so I wasn't there firsthand, but the way they told it to me goes like this. This took place in Kentucky, somewhere around the Daniel Boone National Forest. It was the dead of winter, with a lot of snow on the ground. Real early morning, before the sun came up, so it was still dark, cold, and quiet. My stepdad was taking his two boys, I'll call them Daryl and Roger, out deer hunting like they usually did, so this was a pretty routine run. I don't remember how old they were exactly at this time, but I want to say early to mid-teens sounds about right, so that would have put the year in the mid to late 80s. The three of them split up to go sit in their own area when they arrived at their usual hunting spots. Daryl sat on the ground up against a tree overlooking a huge, huge, white snow-covered field. They've gone hunting with their dad I don't even know how many times by now, so Daryl was getting kind of bored. And, of course, he had been up the whole night before doing only Lord knows what at his age. Naturally, after settling in for a while, he got tired and started to doze off while it was still dark. He woke up as the first little bit of light was coming to the sky, and he saw right smack in front of him a big buck staring down at him, nose to nose. This buck was staring plumb down at his face. He could feel it breathing on him, but he couldn't move. He didn't try to reach for his gun. He didn't react at all. He just looked up at it groggily, confused. He felt like he was dreaming, so he didn't think anything about it in the moment. As he was looking up at it, the deer started to walk back away from him smoothly, and then Darryl fell asleep again. When he woke up again, it was because his dad and his brother were yelling at him. It was now daylight, and they didn't know what he had gotten up to. So when they saw him still sitting there, they started cracking jokes at him for falling asleep. He had forgotten about the deer until he stood up. That's when he saw the tracks. But when he really looked at them closely, he realized the tracks didn't make any sense. They were pointed in the wrong direction, as if the deer had walked up to him backward. With the snow on the ground, it was very easy to see where the deer had stopped, and the tracks were in a straight line right up to him. And then they went off to nowhere. It was like the deer had walked out of him and then just disappeared. The deer didn't turn around anywhere. It didn't walk around the tree. It was a single straight line. But he saw its face inches away from him, and he now knew that that part of the dream wasn't a dream, and it freaked him out. My stepdad and Roger saw the tracks too. They couldn't figure it out either. My stepdad, who has seen hundreds, if not thousands, of deer tracks before, could not make any sense of it. When I was told the story, it was the three of them telling it to me together. We were talking about spooky stuff in the kitchen one day during a birthday party, and they each corroborated each other's story exactly and agreed on the events as Darryl was telling it to me. I don't think it was rehearsed. It didn't sound like a story they told very often to just anyone, and I do believe them. I would have asked them to tell you the story themselves, but I don't talk to them anymore. It's probably been 5 or 6 years since I've heard from each of my stepbrothers, and my stepdad has passed away since then. We all sort of fell apart and stopped talking after that. But yeah, Kentucky is a weird place.
No kidding.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, these not deer stories, because they kind of seem, several people have commented like they felt like they were dreaming, mm-hmm. or they were hallucinating. But I mean,
It's that weird feeling of like the silence, like we talked about the Oz effect. A lot of people report that when they run. Maybe they're fey.
I don't know, but like I like the fact that because there was freshly fallen snow, it was easy to track.
Yeah,
and the deer tracks look like they came from Darryl sitting and walked in a straight line, and then there was no more tracks. Like it just got picked up or walked into another plane, another dimension. I don't know.
Man, that's wild. I've never, you know, of course, we've tracked things in the snow, but could you imagine being on a track of anything like that, only to have it stop, just literally gone?
The only time I can think of anything like that was that pig carcass that we were looking for, where it just looked like something kind of picked it up.
The idea of seeing the physical tracks in the snow and then it just being gone is crazy to me.
Yeah, terrifying. I don't know. These not deer sightings, it's a weird thing. It's a very phenomenon weird. I was not aware of. Till recently, so.
Well, here's another phenomenon that I wasn't aware of till our homie Lon sent this to me. Have you ever heard of the Tuxedo Man?
No.
Yeah, me either. So Lon's got this up, and I want to know from y'all, if any of you have ever had any encounter with Tuxedo Man, let me read this to you. It says Tuxedo Man twice encountered at different Wisconsin rural locations. It says, I'd like to share a story I've never told before. From the summer of 2007, I was 18 years old at the time and enjoying a beautiful Wisconsin Saturday night at the local racetrack. It was my hangout spot every weekend during my teenage years. My neighbor raced in the late model division, which started my love for racing. I was friends with my neighbor's two sons and had hitched a ride, like always, with his wife and youngest son to the track that evening. Well, as the night grew on and the racing wrapped up, we'll call my neighbor Tim. Well, Tim's wife was getting tired and decided to drive home with their youngest son. I, along with Tim and his other son, stayed in the pits for roughly another hour or so before Tim decided to head out. Now, it was about a 45-minute drive home, which we left sometime around 12:30 that morning. So the first 10 minutes of the drive was mostly past open cornfields, no buildings, a few houses here and there, and I was sitting in the passenger seat, just casually looking around here and there. Now, I can't recall exactly how, but something got my attention a little ways up the road. It looked like a person walking, which is no big deal. Even if it's in the middle of nowhere, it's no big deal. But as we got closer, I'll never forget the next handful of seconds. What at first looked like a man walking down the side of the road was a man walking with his eyes closed, sporting a ragged tuxedo, pale as can be, with very faint blood splotches scattered around his face. A creepy sight no matter what, and with me being the only one with a view once we passed, I looked in the massive mirror on my neighbor's truck. The man was nowhere to be found. He didn't fall or run. He was just gone. There's no other way to put it. Although it may sound terrible, all three of us were so creeped out by the man's appearance that there was no way that we were stopping. And if that wasn't creepy enough, when we got back to Tim's house, his wife still being up, the first thing she says, "Did you see that weird guy walking down the road in the tux?" And since we did, of course, we explained we had. Now, it wasn't for a few minutes, though, that we realized we had witnessed the same man in completely different places. See, Tim's wife came across the man roughly 30 minutes driving distance further up than we did. And to make it even stranger, she got caught up in a parking lot talking to another racer's wife and eventually left only about 15 minutes before we did. She never looked back like I did, so she had no idea if he had vanished. So to give my best description, the man was around 6 feet tall, maybe a tad shorter, fully dressed up, looked as if he was between 28 to 37 years of age. Goes on to say here that eyes closed and was walking slowly. Made no other movement besides walking. Was not staggering as if drunk, and from what I can recall, his tux was slightly ruffled up, along with faint patches of blood. Now, Tim is not the kind of guy that's into the paranormal, but he was pretty disturbed over the sight. Now, maybe shaken up is actually a better term, and I had never seen him shaken. And then to hear his wife giving roughly the same story, only farther down the route, it was quite chilling to say the least. The fact we witnessed this around nothing but cornfields didn't help either. The whole thing left me scratching my head, LS.
Wow.
I have so many questions with that, though.
Was it just some crackhead walking down the street, or was it something paranormal?
Or was it someone that had crashed out in a car? But even then, it doesn't make
killer,
sense.
Serial killer, perhaps?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You know, it reminds me a lot of the Grinning Man reports.
Yes.
And those were the ones that the first one took place in New Jersey. And there were some other sightings of him in West Virginia. But what's interesting is that a lot of them happened in the year 1966. And there wasn't really a whole lot of sightings since then. And I actually spoke to David Weatherly one time. We had him on our show, remember? Mm-hmm. And he and his friend had a run-in with this Grinning Man, the Tuxedo Man. Never really heard of that, but it sounds eerily similar.
Yeah.
What a lot of people think that is it's like some other entity from like an alien trying to pass themselves off as a human. A lot of the Grinning Man stories are associated with injured cold, you know. So I don't know, but that is bizarre.
It's very bizarre because it doesn't – there bears no reason. It's not – unless you could go back and look and do a little research and find out if that area there was an accident, if there was something that had happened. There's so many ways to approach to try to find out if it was spectral or if it's just rift in time or, like you said, if it's something – truly evil. But then whenever they don't interact with people that have these sightings, when there's zero interaction, there's zero of anything, like not even an acknowledgement that the cars drove by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. And then it vanished. It makes me think or feel like you're just seeing a replay. And like, it just may have been that very instant for the next couple of hours is that little replay was there, and then it's gone. Like something in that past was just replaying like a glitch over and over, like a skipping record. And if you like that creepy story, I got something for y'all after the break. I think you're really going to enjoy a little hauntings from around the world. We got a castle and a couple of mansions that have a disturbing past. Let's jump over there to that, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Y'all, let's do this. I'm just going to jump right into it, right? It's story time with Uncle Ham, and we're talking about haunted spots around the world. I don't even know what led me to this other than my slight fascination with castles. That would be probably the only thing. This is kind of what pointed me down this path, but who's not, right? I mean, come on. Who's not slightly fascinated with castles? The idea of getting to live in a castle, right? That would just be fun. But anyway, so I'm going to start this world trip, if you will. I don't cover, of course, every place, but it's coming. I think I've got a few more that I've dug up. But I'm going to start with Eltz Castle in Germany along a little river area or something. There's like some pretty little area in the Rhine Valley of Germany along a very popular trade route where this castle was built all the way back in the 12th century. And as far as I'm aware, it's still owned by the same family, the Eltz family. And I want to say it's over 30 generations it's been in their family, and it's stayed true. Now, the really interesting thing about this place is you would think it had been bombed, right? You'd think that there would have been some kind of battle fought in it or around it, because a lot of the castles in the older stone buildings, all of this was destroyed during World War II. This never was. They attribute it to the fact that because it was on that trade route for so many, millennia, you know, whatever, so many years, that they've made friends with so many people that reach goes deep and far in the world. And so it was kind of one of those things that everyone agreed to leave it alone right now. Whether or not that's truly true, who knows? But I thought it was interesting to give the tale because... So this story is going to sound like... I don't know if this sounds like the movie plots that we get today or if the movie plots today or, you know, of modern time may have influenced a story that may or may not have been... You know, we don't really know. But so here's the story. So there was a girl. Always, right? Always a girl. There was a girl that lived in this castle, and her name was Agnes. And she was the daughter of the fella, Count Eltz, that owned all of this, right? Now, she was raised, and I'm not even sure if it's a thing to say now. I don't even know what the way the world is, but a tomboy, right? That's what it was when, I mean, we have tomboy girlfriends that, you know, they grow up and they were always like the little sister of your friends, of the brothers, and you know, all those guys are hanging out and there's a little sister. And that's usually always how it starts, right? And then one of the guys in the group falls in love with the dude's little sister. It always that way, but it's always the little tomboy girl. And that's pretty much the story of Agnes. She was, I believe, the only sister, had several brothers, did not do the normal girly things, did not play the normal daughter of a count, and was more like Arya Stark, if you've seen Game of Thrones. Like, this old gal liked to dress up in men's clothing and carry the swords, and she was rough and tumble and rode horses, and this is what she wanted to do. She was a very adventure-seeking young woman. So, early in her life, she finds out that she's going to be promised to a fella. This fella's name is Bronsberg, and he was just a couple of years older than her, but of course they're still very young at this point. And she doesn't like the idea of it, right? She's like, what are you talking about? I don't even know this guy. I'm not going to marry this guy. And they were like, nope, that's the way. This is what's going on. So, and again, you know, these marriages were usually always done on nothing more than political gain by the father. You know, he didn't care. I mean, it was one of those things that the women were used as bargaining chips, as terrible as that was. And she wasn't going to have it. She's like, no, I don't believe so. So eventually this works out to where they have a party at the castle. And she gets to meet him. And they're around each other. And she instantly hates him. Automatically, she's like, this Bronsberg dude's a joke. I can't stand him. I'm not even going to talk to him, right? Nothing. And so they don't. She goes and plays with her friends. He's over there with his family visiting. And that was that. And they were young at this point. So fast forward, I'm assuming this is probably taking place in the mid-teens, right? Because that was normally how this went. So they have a huge festival at the castle. And that festival is like a week long. And they're building up to the wedding of Agnes and Bronsberg. And so he shows up with his family. They're having a big party that evening. There's music, there's drink, everyone's laughing, and he is trying to catch her eye. He just wants to be noticed. He is infatuated with her. He is truly in love with her. He's never seen a more beautiful woman, and he can't believe it. He can't believe his luck that I'm going to get to marry her. And like, you know, he probably had no idea at that young age. It's just the way it is. He's all excited. He gets the prize. That's the way he feels. And that's kind of the way he was treating her. And so he goes out on the dance floor. At least that's how I like to imagine it, right? He goes out. And the story goes that he forces a kiss on her. That he grabs her in front of all the people. And he forces a kiss on her. He wants to show her. I have to show her. You are my love. I want you. And of course, it may not have been that romantic. He may have been a total ass. Who knows? But what he did is what started this snowball of events. And this snowball of events was he kissed her, she pushed away, defying him, and then she hit him. Open hand, boom, draws down and pops him one, right? Don't ever put your hands on me. Well, he's not going to have it, right? This dude's a prince. He's like, dude, I don't know who you think you are. So he, of course, blows up. Now, back in the day, you know, you always heard the gauntlet was thrown down, right? The big gloves, they take them off, they slap them in the face, they throw them down. Story goes, and it may be nothing more than romantic, you know, addition, but he throws the gloves down after the smack. He pretty much tells everybody it's done and leaves. Well, the family freaks. The Count Eltz, he loses his mind. He's like, what did you do? I cannot believe you did that. They're going to attack us. So they have to, that night, the party falls apart. He brings everybody in. He's like, look, they're coming. They're coming. This was fragile to start with. Agnes broke it. They're coming. So they get everything together and they wait. And they wait a few days. And those days turn into a few weeks. Those few weeks turn into a month. And but 1 month turns into a few months. Nothing happens. Right? Like 3 or 4 months go by. Nothing really happened. I think it's like 3 months. Nothing goes down. So they were on high alert for a week, and everyone knows how that goes. You start slowly lowering your guard over time. Well, what they didn't know was, and it's believed that Bronsberg had either a little bird that lived in the castle that would send him messages or would get him information, or they believed that it was being watched, that possibly there were people around that were working outside the castle that was just keeping an eye on everything and letting them know the daily routine. This was a long-planned, vengeful attack. But it came. And it came, just so happens, whenever the brothers, the father, and most of the men were all gone on a 3-day hunting trip. They leave the castle. They go on their trip. There's a few of the guards that are still there, you know, guardsmen that stay at the castle all the time protecting the women folk and the children. And that's when they attack. They wait until everyone's gone. Bronsberg leads his knights in. They come over the top of the wall and they come riding across and they're here. And so the fight's on, right? So the guardsmen are fighting as best they can. How are you going to, there's no cell phone. You can't alert them. Like, these people won't know till they get back in 2 days that we've been attacked. Well, Agnes isn't going to take it. So she goes in, she gets her brother's armor. She gets her brother's armor on, gets her sword, gets her horse, and she comes out. And who's the first one, the story goes, that she sees is not only no one but Bronsberg, the man that she struck, the man she was supposed to marry. So here she comes, and she just, in the middle of it, attacks him. Boom, 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 like you can imagine. Well, he did not know it was Agnes. He did not know it was the woman he loved. So he fights back. Except he's a little bigger, and he's a little more gifted, and he's a little better trained, and he defeats her. He kills her, and still has no idea. No clue that he's just killed her. After the battle, he's going through and he's checking everything. His men are checking. They're looking for Agnes. They're looking. Did they escape? Did they get? They're going through. Where's the brothers? Where's the father? Is the castle ours? What are we going to do? You know, I mean, it's one thing to react instantly. It's another thing to plan it out for months. And while he's searching the dead, he finds Agnes. He pulls the mask up, pulls the visor up. There she is. He can't believe it. He can't believe it. Story goes, he leaves. He renounces everything that he has. He grabs his horse. He grabs what things he's got with him, and he rides away. His people never saw him again. Story goes is that he's gone. Nobody ever knows. Agnes is dead. Bronsberg is vanished. You know, the castle has fallen. There's nothing there. It is their reaction between the young and the old, right, or between the children and their parents have destroyed any chance of alliance. That's how this works. So fast forward all the way till now. If you go to Germany and you want to go visit Elk's Castle, you can. You can go take it. Just like, I don't believe all these places are, but most of these places you can go visit yourself. You can go check out. And that was one of those. You can go check this all out. Now, the story goes that you can hear, or people have reported hearing. I'm not going to say you can, but it's been reported that you can hear the clopping of horse hooves outside the castle, that you can still hear the sounds in the distance of what they think might be the noises of the battle. That not only that, but the armor that Agnes wore is still in the castle. You can go see the armor. People have said that they have seen visions out on the outside of the castle of a knight on horseback. Now the story goes is they're not sure if it's Agnes or if it's Bronsberg. They have no idea. It's debated on which one it could be. A lot of the folks that work there report some strange things that aren't really necessarily related to the battle or related to anything that really took place in that whole buildup to it. And what I mean by that is they report doors locking and unlocking. They report things moving. You leave a book, you leave something here. The next morning, it's not in the room. It's in the room next door. Nobody's been in there. Nobody's playing these pranks. These things are moving. They talk about not only will doors lock and unlock, they will open and close. You leave one open, it's closed. You leave it closed, it's opened. You never know. They talk about certain things in display cases that they have that'll be along the walls, and that these displays will move. Little things, right, will move just one side to the other, and you could see where it was. And it doesn't seem like it happens all the time, but they do talk a lot about giggling and whispering. They said it sounds like children playing, and that these children must have been running up and down the castle halls, but they're not sure because it doesn't sound like screaming. They don't sound like anything else. And then the story is that people have spotted, they believe that it was truly Knight Mr. Bronsberg there. And they say that he is, you could see him, and that they believe that the one knight that they've seen all the time is Bronsberg, and that he's, you know, always waiting for Agnes. And who knows? It's one of those very romantic stories. It's a very tragic story, but it's very interesting that you can see things related to that story or hear things. There's been reports of sightings related to that story. And then you have other parts in there in this castle that there's nothing related to that battle that they're seeing. There'd be no reason for kids to be giggling in the middle of a battle, right? Screams, yes. Laughing, I don't know. No, of course not. So then that brings us to, and brought me to, a place called the Key Mansion in Shanghai. Now, this is a really, really interesting thing because it's another one of those stories that it's kind of an older story, so you're not really sure, right? This is between World War I and World War II, and this takes place. the Key brothers. They left, they lived in a little village, right, in China, way, you know, out in the country, and they wanted what was, what they thought they were due. They felt like they were made for more, right? I have bigger dreams. There's things that I need to do. I'm made for more. And so they go to Shanghai, and they try to find work, and they find work, you know, meager work, and they come across a fella that's a German man, and this German man has like an export business, right? And so he does a little exporting there into China, and then he's got like storage buildings along the docks there, and he's doing very good for himself. And then so when these brothers show up, he hires them to kind of be his delegates. He's like, man, I didn't, you know, I kind of got lucky. You guys, you know, he starts with his Chinese and their Chinese, and he starts teaching them some German, and they start learning, and then, you know, it starts going, and next thing you know, he's like, man, I'm glad I got you guys. And these Key brothers were his right hand. And so they work together. Every day they're working, and he's knocking it down. He's making money, and he's, I wouldn't say they're getting rich by any means, right, the brothers, but they're making a solid living for the time. They're doing great for themselves after leaving the village. Well, World War II breaks out. Well, German people, you know, they didn't get the best treatment either, like everybody. You know, everything gets crazy, and it got crazy. So he goes back to China. He just, boom, I've got to get out of here. So he goes back. But when he does, he leaves his businesses in charge with the Key brothers, right? So they were like, look, you take over this, and y'all do what you do. I got to get out of here. So he leaves. They're sitting there. They don't know what to do. So they run it as best they can. This was all before the war actually starts. So when the war actually starts, they close all the docks. So now there's no more import-export coming in, going out. There's nothing. So they're having a real hard time. And so they don't really know what to do. So the brothers are going through all the warehouses. They're going through all their stuff. They're like, what do we got that we can sell? What can we work on? And they come across one of the German fella's buildings that is packed, story says, full of paint, cans of paint, if you will. Isn't that crazy? So all these cans of paint are just rolled up. Now, it doesn't say, you know, colors, none of that. It just says cans of paint. And because there was no imports and exports, there was, oddly enough, a run on paint. And almost overnight, like literally within a few weeks, when the news gets out that they've got paint, they become millionaires. They sell so much, and the price is already up, that it blows up. And so they, you know, you're talking about rags to riches. Literally, they have no idea what to do. So they have this money. They have a successful business. People are talking great about them, talking, involving them in the politics of the town. They're doing all of these things. So they decide, what are we going to do? We're going to build mansions. We've always wanted mansions. We're building a mansion. And like brothers would do, they build right next door to each other, and they're identical. These are two like cookie cutter images of each other, right side by side. And these men loved gardening. They loved to have the outdoors around the buildings, and you know, and they had the big wall up around the outside of the house, so they have it blocking it from the town. And this is a beautiful place. And of course, like Fizzy's pointed out, when you start big balling, what do you get, folks? That's right. That's right. Exotic animals, right? You get exotic animals. So they start out with, you ready? Peacocks. Peacocks, big deal. So these brothers get them some peacocks. The peacocks don't satisfy the fun, so these brothers go get crocodiles. And then, of course, we've all seen it, right? We've all seen the Tiger King. Well, you just can't stop with peacocks and crocodiles. Nope. You got to go buy Bengal tigers. So the story goes that you could go by there. There's tigers in the garden. There's all these different exotic animals in the house. All of this. But there started to be in some talk that there's more to this whole story than, you know, good old boy paint salesman. That's not the way this is going. And in fact, that's the way it ended up. One day, the folks come into work. And the servants come by the house to see what's going on. Hey, you need us to go ahead and do the laundry? You want us to, you know, whatever. This is our job, too. Nobody's there. So they go to the next brother's house. Nobody's there. they can't find any sign of any problems of anything. It's like these two brothers legitimately just vanished. And the odd thing is they left no paperwork. They left no heir to their fortune. They left nothing with their businesses. It's gone. Completely gone. Well, so they fall into disrepair, right? Like these mansions go completely untouched. People pulled out. Everything was done. And in fact, one of them, they tore down one of the brothers' mansions. It just finally ended up falling and rotting in, and they just destroy it. So they decide, you know what? Well, where this thing is, and we really don't have anybody to deal with, we're going to move it. We're going to just go ahead, and we're going to try to sell it because it's in a good, you know, it's relatively good shape. Let's sell this area. We've already tore down the one mansion and sold it, this one right here. Let's see if we can sell it. Let's see if somebody will buy the mansion and tear it down, or we can, you know, do whatever. But we need to move on and not just leave this in prime real estate. And that's what they do. But it was at that point when everything's went crazy. So they hire. When I say they, I'm assuming it's the city. You know, they bring them in, the people or whoever was trying to develop, a land developer brings in a group of folks, and they're like, all right, we're going to go to work on this. And that's when everything's went crazy. They don't know if it was only this mansion. If it had been the other one, they didn't really talk about experiencing it. But at this one, the people working there, the men working on this site, start reporting that they start hearing some strange things. And what I mean by that is animal sounds. They're hearing tigers roar. They're hearing like the squawks of or calls of peacock. They're hearing these strange noises of animals that aren't there. Then it gets even crazier. They start spotting these ghostly animals. They start seeing the ghosts of tigers. And they go on to say and report that there were more than one, multiple workers were, and it was only the night shift workers, were bitten by animals. One even reported that he was attacked by a ghostly tiger. He turns the corner in a hallway, and this ghostly tiger image, and it plays out much like it does in Ghostbusters, right? When Slimer comes over there and gets on Bill Murray. That's what happens to this dude. This dude gets attacked by a ghostly Bengal tiger. Now he's freaking out. And now here's what's really weird. Apparently they took him to the hospital. There's no bite marks. Yeah, because it's not real. But he felt it. He said, man, I felt like the pain, the crushing feeling, the whole thing. Like you feel it, which is another thing. Very, very odd. It was reported at one point while they had a crane, a big construction crane there, that a woman was on the streets, and she had reported that she had seen a dragon wrapping around the arm on the boom of the crane. It's crazy, right? It's crazy. So they, of course, stop working on it, and they go, look, we're just going to turn this into like a resort area or a vacation spot for people to come and experience the paranormal. And so that's kind of what they did. They said, hey, we're leaving it alone. This is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to play out. Now, the weird thing about this is that is one narrative of the story that you will find. The other narrative of the story that you will find is that a lot of the folks in the know believed that the German was actually a drug dealer, or that the German man was a smuggler, rather, I guess would be the better term, not knowing that he was actually dealing drugs, but that whatever these brothers found that they were selling paint, well, that may not have actually been what it was, or it might have been paint, and then they turned to where they liked the money and they realized what it was, and some of those less savory characters could then in turn, you know, use their buildings, and it could have all been a whole big drug deal. Maybe they're hiding it in the paint cans. Who really knows? We don't know. And then it's also believed that the reason the brothers disappeared is they were involved with some nefarious things, right? And so that's what got them vanished, if you will, because, you know, like we said, they were never seen again. You kind of look at it differently, things like that. But here is a really interesting one, too, that took place in Lima, Peru, and it's called the Matusita House. Now, the Matusita House has a very, very interesting history, but the coolest thing about it is it's two floors. That's not the coolest part. The coolest part is the second floor is the only floor haunted, right? Not the first floor, just second floor. Second floor is where the ghosts like to party, right? They up there at the top, they're closer to the Lord, they're partying, okay? We're getting after it. So that story is told like this, that there in Lima, a very beautiful woman arrived. Older woman and stunning. And this is colonial era time. This is back in the day. And she shows up and she has this house. Or I'm sorry, not this house. Not this house in particular, but has a house. And she doesn't fit in. Nobody knows where she's from. Nobody knows what she did. She's more of a free spirit. And of course, people, the townsfolk, start to talk. And I'm assuming that you know how that goes. Somebody, you know, we've all seen the movies. Somebody goes up, something happens, they blame the new person. And of course, at this time, witchcraft is flowing. You know, not really flowing, but the accusations of witchcraft are flowing. And so that's what happens. They bring her to the Inquisitor and they kill her. They burn this woman to death on the alleged idea that she's a witch. Now, the story of the Matasita house is that where they killed her is where this house is built. Now, oddly enough, the addition to that story is she cursed the land and the people, right? Yeah, I know what y'all are saying. Yeah, you go watch it on Netflix right now. Fear Street. Here's your free drop. Free plug, y'all. Fear Street on Netflix. Kind of the same thing. Witch, right? Curses something. So if she wasn't a witch, this curse wouldn't happen. So it sounds like she was a witch. Sound like they killed the right woman, right? I'm just kidding, folks. Just jokes here. So this goes on. They've killed her here, all this stuff. Nothing doesn't really seem to happen, or at least I can't find that things that happen until this house gets built. And then years after the house is built, a fella moves in there with his wife and children. And this fella has a lot of money. And so he brings servants with him. So he has chefs and attendants, and he brings a big group of people with him. And him and his family live on the second floor, and all of his servants and everything, they all live on the bottom, on the first floor. The ground floor, if you will. Well, apparently this old boy was a real ass, like a terrible, terrible human being, right? And he kind of got on a power trip to mistreat folks. So they're tired of it. This goes on. He treats his family like crap. He treats the people that work for him like crap. So a few of the chef and one of the head butler, the head attendant, and some of the others that work there are like, you know what? We're going to fix this up. We can't kill him. We can't, you know, oh, we're not going to beat him up. We can't do that. But what we can do is make him look a fool in front of his peers. And that will be the best thing. Let's make him make the fool of himself. So they decide what they're going to do. So they know there's a dinner party coming up. So a week out, I don't know how they did this, but a week out, one of them goes and gets a dose, if you will, a large little bottle of LSD. And the idea that they come up with is during this party, this dinner party, they're going to dose him. But they're not just going to dose him. They're going to dose everybody. We're going to put it in the food, and we're going to let them all go wacky, make a real ass out of themselves. This whole thing, the whole thing will fall apart. And that's what they're shooting for. So that's exactly what they do. They bring out the food, the drink. Everything's great, right? All laced with LSD. We don't know how much. And I'm assuming that, you know, not everybody would know. I mean, hell, do you know? I don't know. I don't know what the actual dosage of LSD should be. So I've never done it, you know. Regretfully, I would like to have known what it felt like. But I've never had the opportunity. So that's what the plan is. They treat all the food. They bring it all in. They drop it all off. They bow out. They're, oh, yeah, yeah, y'all have your party. As they leave, they lock the dining room door. So they lock the dining room door. They all slip back to the kitchen, and they're just hanging out. I picture them all laughing, smoking a cigarette, you know, sipping on coffee, and they giggling. Oh, I can't believe what's going on out there. Now the story goes 15, 20 minutes later passes, and they start hearing voices. And it's not the voices of like normal dinner conversation. It's a little, you know, you can hear the animation in the voice. And they're like, huh. They said, then they hear a glass break. So they're like, oh, it's kicking in. Somebody's knocked something over. Then they hear another one break. And then it starts to snowball, right? The domino effect starts to take place. The voices get louder. Now there's a sound of plates breaking. Now there's just a ruckus, if you will, right? Some tomfoolery coming from that room. Well, the chef and all them, they're laughing, right? His butler buddy, they're all giggling. They're like, this is funny. These people are falling apart. Then it gets bad. All of a sudden, they're screaming. Loud screaming. Blood-curdling screams. And the servants panic. What's happening? So they run back down the hallway. They unlock the door and they swing the door open. And this is after the sound has died down. They've let it get calm in there. There's no noise coming from the room. So they unlock it, they open it up, expecting to see people passed out, sleeping on the table, food everywhere, a mad food fight, right? That's not what they found. What they found was blood, and lots of it. What they found was people that had been so overdosed with LSD that they went mad, broke plates, broke glasses, and savagely attacked each other. The story says that there were hands, heads, pieces of meat, organs, like they had savagely torn each other to pieces in that room. At this point, the servants realize they've gone too far. What have we done? How are we going to explain this? I'm assuming there's probably a way to check to see if LSD was in the system. I don't know. But they don't know what to do. Their joke or their way of getting even has completely backfired. And it's all their fault. And so they know what's coming next. They know what's about to happen. So, in order to circumvent that, they all gather in the same room and they hang themselves. All the servants killed themselves in that room. This is how the story goes. And from that point forward, that house called the Yellow House there in Peru gained the reputation for being the most haunted place in the whole town, if not the whole country. Now it's left alone, nobody touches it, and it falls into disrepair like normal. And so years go by, and a property developer finally steps up. I don't believe he was from Lima, of course, and he's like, look, we got to do something about this. Great property, great building. It's a waste. And so that's what he does. He purchases it. He fixes it up. He gets everything going. Everything's great. He sells it to a Japanese family moving in. A husband and a wife and a couple of kids. And they move in. And of course, I'm not sure of the date, but they're not told of the history of the house. They're not told of the history of any of this. They just move in. And of course, oddly enough, fitting enough, I guess, if you will, as the story is told, that the night they move in to spend their first evening there, that the husband wakes up in the middle of the night, possessed by something he knows not, only to take a knife out of storage, murder his entire family, and then turn the knife on himself, killing himself with it too. First night in the house. Well, as that happens, well, you can only imagine. Well, now it doubles down on the darkness around that house, and nobody will touch it. Nobody will go around it, right? And so they decide to bring a priest in. That's the answer. Let's bring a priest in. We're going to perform an exorcism. This will be perfect. They bring the priest in. He goes all through the bottom floor. Everything's great, right? Everything's good. Then they're going to bring him into the second floor. They bring him to the second floor. He goes up. He goes to battle the darkness and exorcise the demons. Drops dead. Panic attack. Killed him. Or it could have been a heart attack. Maybe he was obese. Maybe he was unhealthy. Who knows? But either way, story says the priest died on the second floor. Well, now you jump up into the 60s, right? 1960s. We're partying it up, right? Free love. Free ghost house. There was a fella named Humberto Vera Vilches. He was a television host in Argentina. Pretty funny guy, okay? So, Humberto was running his lips, running off at the head, and he says on television, he makes a bet with another friend. He said, not only will I go to Matasita House, La Casa Matasita, not only will I go there, but I'm going to stay the night. And not only will I stay one night, hell, I won't even stay the weekend, y'all. I'm staying 7 days and nights. I'm living it up for a week in this house. And I'm sure, you know, he don't care. He's like, there's nothing going to happen here, right? So the story goes that he swings in there and he's only going to stay on the second floor. It's easy to stay on the first floor. Nothing happens. Second floor is where the party is. So he goes in there. First night in the house, goes in. 4 hours later, they hear screaming. He busts out of the house and collapses on the sidewalk outside the front gate 4 hours into the night. He's gathered up. He's had a mental break, and he spends the next 2 years in a psychological institution trying to get therapy over what happened to him in that house. I can't find anywhere that it said what happened. I can't find anything of where it said what happened to him. So, but I guess it's safe to assume it was not pleasant. Now, there's more story to it. And that story is that the people from the street and the residents of Lima have said, even now, that, and I do believe it was rented. I believe it's been a bank. It's been boutiques. It's been several things on the first floor. Second floor stays locked. Nobody uses it. Nobody goes there. Everything's left alone. But back to the people on the street. There are citizens in there that report seeing the movement of curtains. They report seeing people in the second floor windows when they know nobody's in there. They report seeing apparitions around there, around those windows. It's a very odd thing. They start reporting at times they've heard screams. They've heard different sounds. Everything that they could attribute to a haunted house, people claim all around there has happened. But there's another part to this story that I'm going to leave you with before we wrap it up that I thought was very interesting. And that's this. La Casa Matasita is across the street from the United States Embassy in Peru. Right across the road. Or it was, at least. But across the road. They believe, when I say they, some of the locals believe, and I'm probably with good reason, that the reason that that legend was even spread was to help make sure that no one would go into that home to spy on the U.S. Embassy. Yeah. They believe that the U.S. Embassy helped spread that, may have even helped bolster that. And we know with the stories that we've covered, right, about cats that were trying to collect sound or rats that was trying to collect, you know, audio. We've covered that. It's crazy stuff. This doesn't sound out of the realm of possibility. That they, maybe the U.S. planted things to make those sounds, speakers. Maybe there were people in those houses. Maybe they went on a disinformation tour and spread more information about the murders or about things that happened that might not have truly happened, simply to keep anyone from buying and moving into that home for intelligence gathering reasons, to watch the comings and goings of the U.S. Embassy. But now you jump back to 2016. 2016, it all ended. Matasita House was not only remodeled, but was taken apart. Completely taken down, remodeled, and I'm not sure if they're going to move it, if they moved part of it. I'm not sure how all this stuff worked with what they've done. But it seems to have, whatever they've done, it seems to have stopped the madness, right? So with the ending of the madness, it makes you wonder, is that story true? Are any of them true? Or are they all just tales of time? A lot of things change as we get older. You start telling stories about your grandparents that maybe you elaborated a little more on, or maybe your grandparents elaborated on their parents, you know, and that's how stories grow and gain legs, and it becomes fun. It becomes the folklore that we all love and enjoy. And I hope you loved and enjoyed some of the strange places that are haunted, that aren't just here in the States, that are from around. And everyone from around the world that listens, thank you all so much. Maybe I've dabbled in something that's close to you, or maybe you've been there. Maybe you've seen one of these places and you've toured one of these places, or you've had experiences. Please send it to us. You know how to do that. ExpandedPerspectives@yahoo.com. Shoot that in there. Hit us with some stories. We'll let Mary know. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. There's a bunch more. I've got a bunch more. In fact, I may knock a few more out real quick. But for right now, I'm going to stop it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick Big Fizzy's brain about some of this madness. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, we are back. I hope y'all enjoyed the castle and the houses and the creepy stuff in Shanghai, all of that. Lima, Peru, and then, of course, the castle in Germany, man. That's the only way. And look, admittedly still, I'm a castle junkie all because of Dungeons & Dragons. That's it. That's the reason I love castles.
I like the stories. I always like the pictures there of Transylvania, like the artwork and stuff as a kid. I remember looking at those and... I don't know. I always like that, not necessarily, but that Eastern European area. For whatever reason, it makes it seem creepier.
Because that's where your family's from.
That is true. Maybe it's deep bedded in, within my DNA.
Now, you need to also be honest. That's also the main reason, not just because it was Dungeons and Dragons, but because it was more like that, is the reason you bought The Curse of Strahd.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
100%, right?
Yeah.
I got to have that.
I have not played that yet, but I'm looking forward to it. A lot of people have been recommending that module to me for years. And like I said, I haven't played in a long time. So recently started again, and I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah,
it was
myself.
A lot of fun. Like I said, we are heading to the coast in a couple of weeks. We've got our friends that are back from Japan. We're having a little get together over there.
Yep.
Just trying to enjoy the summer before it's over. That's all we've been doing. We really have. This is one of the least busy summers I've had in a long time.
It's nice.
We finished with our baseball. Jacob is thinking about possibly just not even playing in the fall.
Oh, actually taking before school starts up to play?
Yeah, before school. So I'm like, I hope he continues with that. I'm all for it because it's – look, he gets to have all the fun, but I'm the one that has to go to the practices multiple times a week, private lessons multiple times a week.
Monetarily, it's a little bit of a break.
Everything. I mean, like I said, I've enjoyed it's opened up other hobbies, time for hobbies and stuff. So,
So we get to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, maybe there's a ton of things I could do. We took Luke to Legoland.
How did that go?
It wasn't that good, to be honest. It was kind of annoying. There's just thousands of kids running around, completely out of control.
Just too much, huh?
And I just didn't understand it. So I bribed Luke.
Oh, no.
With a nice purchase. And I like, look, if you pick you out like one of those big Lego sets over there, we can bounce. And so I was able to get out of there quickly.
That wasn't too bad.
But the aquarium we went to before that, he had a really good time.
Well, he got me last week and was explaining to me a bunch of the Godzillas because he's got another Godzilla. And then we were looking at toy photography. And then so I'm hoping, and you said that he's been doing something more with more stop motion. So I'm hoping that he pumps out some other good videos. I got to get little Fizzy back over here this summer and have him do some more videos with me.
You know what's funny is, I don't know how, but he knows how to work Photoshop better than I do.
I'm not surprised. You're not that smart.
I don't really mess with Photoshop that much. When it comes to like photography and stuff,
and he just plops
I mostly
down.
Use Lightroom. Yeah.
And he's like, move, Dad.
I mean, he doesn't know how to do it like, Benny or whatever, Benny Productions. I'm not saying that, but I mean like... For a 9-year-old, it's like pretty cool that
it's
he knows
good.
How to even do it.
And you didn't show him, so he had to learn himself.
So he's got himself it's about half the size of this desk, and he's got him a green screen, and he's got his lighting, and he's got his GoPro, and he takes one picture, moves the object, takes another picture, and he's creating these
Ray Harryhausen
stop motion films. And so, I mean, as a 9-year-old, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's funny.
So I'm sure once it gets all edited, he'll put it up on his YouTube channel, and then I can give everybody the link, and they can go check out Big Fizzy's artwork. The other day he said, like, I want to make a movie, Dad. I want it to be like an hour long. And I was like, I understand that. I go, that's going to take a lot of work, and that file's going to be huge. It's like, why don't you try to make like a 4-minute short first? Get practice at that. Don't just come out trying to shoot the 60-minute film. But I mean, I know, you know, he's a kid. He's got a wild
imagination.
Loving
it. It's so great. So great.
But that's about it, man. What have you been up to?
Hanging, playing Dungeons and Dragons, hanging out with a granddaughter, working on stuff around the house, and that's pretty much it. Awesome. Just staying busy. I mean, that's it. Like, it's just ridiculous. But yeah, I love it. Everything's going great. Weather's good. I hope everybody out there is getting by. Hope we're getting through all this. Hope things are getting back to normal for you as best they can. For those up north in the heat, man, I'm sorry. That's the heat we normally get dealt, and we're not even getting dealt that. So everyone, please take care of yourself. If you don't have AC, there's a lot of people that I know up in the Pacific Northwest have no air conditioning.
Well, my dad's sister in New Jersey doesn't have it.
Yeah, look, folks, I understand. Go to Walmart, go someplace that's got it, go hang out. If there's a bookstore, just go hang out in Barnes & Noble, right? Like, just go find you a place to get in the cool weather. But I hope everybody is doing great. And hope y'all have a great weekend. Like, I'm excited about talking to our friends that are back from Japan.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
It's going to be a good time.
If you have any stories or news you want to share with me and Cam, please, I implore you to email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. There's no reason to send us an email asking if you want us to, for you to send us the story. We're telling you, if you have a good story, go ahead and send it in.
Yeah, fire it this way.
You can write a review for us on all podcast platforms.
Ask questions, point fingers.
You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. All these things help us out. And also, if you want extra content, you can sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, click on the Elite tab, and you'll get all that extra content. Till next time, folks, please be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.